We know there are five primary rasas: Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhura. Right? Passive relationship, servitorship, friendship, familial affection, conjugal love. But then we hear there are seven subordinate rasas, Virya, how is that translated? Sometimes as chivalry, but that's not, I don't think the proper word, but like courageous, I think would be better. Gaura, what's dreadful. Some of these things are peculiar because you're like, we'll read in the Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami that it'll even mention something like disease as being some subset of ecstasy or horror. And you're saying, like, how can that be? But then when Rupa Goswami gives examples or Vishwanath gives examples, then you can understand how it's an ecstatic position. One of them is Hasya Rasa, right? And we were just visited by Hasyapriya Prabhu, which I might have mentioned. And London, when Gurudev was leaving once, oh, to go, because I verified that this was Hasyapriya Prabhu. He was going to Soquel, and we're in England, so going British Airways, whatever it was. So some news came in from Hasyapriya, and Gurudev was a little anxious about all the travel arrangements and everything going well. When they said Hasyapriya, he said, Hasyapriya or Krandan Priya or any other Priya. And Krandan means crying. So he's saying, Hasya means, laughing and smiling. And he said, or Krandan Priya. I mean, there just couldn't be a name, Krandan Priya. But I'm not an expert on this, and here I mean in a literary sense, but humor occupies a very special position in literature. Even, the mighty Shakespeare, he has comedies, and Oscar Wilde, the famous, wit, importance of being earnest, is a double entendre, or it's ironic. Saying the importance of being earnest means sincere, but earnest is also a man's name. And in that play, the girl, this man who falsely introduced himself as Jack, he wants to marry this girl, and she said, I could never marry someone with a name so common as Jack. I've known all my life that I will marry a man named Ernest. And his name was actually Ernest, but he was lying, and anyway, it goes on and on and on. But the point is about it being ironic, because it's saying the importance of being earnest. Well, to marry her, you have to be earnest. Your name has to be earnest, but you have to be sincere. You have to not lie. You have to tell the truth. So everything sprung out of that. So the word that's used in literature, in the analysis of literature, is irony. Right? Like, it's ironic when someone wins the lottery, some poor person wins the lottery, but their whole life gets ruined. They get all this money and it ruins their lives. That's irony. How do you say, modified a certain way, it can even have a comedic element to it. But Hasya Rasa, and you know, as a specific quantity, humor, what is funny, we'll see in the playful banter or dialogue between Krishna, Srimati Radharani, and Braja Gopis, so much humor. But it's ironic what is being said. For example, there are so many prayers glorifying Krishna as, you know, Patita Pavana, or the savior of the world. He descends in his many incarnations to rescue the fallen souls. But they will speak sometimes ironically, like, what about us? It said you've descended in this world to relieve the fallen souls of their suffering. But their suffering is separation from Krishna. So in a teasing, playful, almost playful way, they're saying, you've descended to relieve the suffering of the fallen souls, but we are the exception. So there's that sort of thing, but also we hear that sometimes they're extremely clever, right? As Guru Maharaj said, disguised as half-civilized, stupid jungle girls, they're the most clever. So in words of praise to Krishna, sometimes they take the last syllable of one word and make it the first syllable of the next word. They break them in different places, and then it changes the whole meaning. And what was some sort of effusive praise of Krishna turns into a type of loving insult. Same words, but with a little different emphasis. So it's humorous, it's ironic, it's humorous, and it's lilanukul. It makes the pastimes happier. They're more fun, this playful banter. And as I've pointed out at other times, Srila Gurudev, I mean, no less than Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada identified Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadev Goswami Maharaj as a quote-unquote transcendental humorist. Because Gurudev wrote some article, this Cholerpate, and Prabhupada said, this is so perfect because the average person, they're not inclined to read some philosophical article. But he said, here, you've told a story, it's funny, but all the philosophy is there also. So you made it entertaining and even humorous, but there's spiritual substance there. Right. So, what comes to mind, where immediately, in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, the Sanskrit word for residence, it can mean different things, like address. So Rupa Goswami gives an example. It's a play, a double meaning on the word when Radharani is asking, where is Krishna, where does his address, where does he live? And he says, in your eyes, that's my residence. So it's playful, but it's sweet, and it's lovingly charming. Srila Gurudev did this so many times. I think of one where he's quoting the maxim. He's talking about one of his followers, and who had a tendency to mishear. And then on the basis of that, what was misheard to represent that? So Gurudev once said about him, he said, to err is human, and he is very human. So he's not saying he says things very wrong. He just said, to err is human. And he's what? Very human. So indirectly, to make that point, we celebrate the Govardhan Puja and Go Puja, the worship of the cows. And we know on Srila Gurudev's veranda, he's sitting there. If anyone will walk and before him with a bag of something, whatever it might be, he has to know what's inside. You can't just walk by him. You know, he'll stare, you know, he'll want to know. So those who are his permanent servitors, his veranda servitors, like Bhakti Lalita, she would just show him all of her stuff without him asking, knowing that he wanted to see it. So one of the things that there was a refrigerator that she used and some others, and so she would get whatever she was eating for that day, and have to walk in front of Gurudev. So she would just turn and show him, like, just present it to him, and he'd look. Especially, he had some interest in, extraordinary interest in different types of food. So she showed him one day, and there's like different types of lettuce and celery and green things and like that. And Gurudev looked down like this, and he said, I can see that your Lord is Krishna. Like that. And then just, and she looked at me like, what's that? She said, I can see your Lord is Krishna. And he looked to me to see if I caught what he said. And then I started smiling and laughing. And what he meant was, who is Krishna? We just celebrated Govardhan Puja. Gava Indra, Govinda, the Lord of the cows. So he's saying, when I look at what you're about to eat, it looks like cow food to me. But to say that, that would be insulting. So what did he say? I can see that your Lord is Krishna. And I think of another time when, as his health deteriorated, the range of the different types of prasadam he could take narrowed. There were certain things his servitors were told not to give him, but they're still cooking them downstairs. And sometimes they're bringing that, like, to me and other Maharajas, putting on our plate. But they kind of have to walk in front of Gurudev and do it, like, secretly. Because if he sees it, he's going to ask, and what are you going to tell, you know, Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj, you can't have this, you know? That it's not good for him. That's not going to happen. So they have to, like, kind of secretly do. And it might surprise some, but just a point to notice, Gurudev never spoke when he took prasadam and didn't want anybody to speak. And I'm not saying everyone has to follow that. I'm just informing you. He did not, his prasadam taking was very serious with Gurudev. So he didn't speak a word unless it was related to that, and expected everyone else to maintain silence also, only prasadam related. But this one day, he starts singing the song, and I felt like he wants me to ask. So I broke, he's singing, and, you know, we're taking prasadam's covering his hand. And I said, oh, Maharaj, what is that song you're singing? And he went, oh, he was just waiting for a cue. Oh, he said, Radharani is in a very difficult position. And I was like, what? And he said, She is so upset because she is on her veranda and she can see that Krishna is going to the house of another gopi. And she's thinking, that's bad enough that he's going to the house of another gopi, but that he has to go through my courtyard to go there. It's too much. So what is he saying? It's bad enough that he can't take that prasadam, but that they have to bring it right in front of him and put it on our plate. So one thing that is extraordinary, we can say, well, this is a very ordinary event. We always expect extraordinary personalities to do extraordinary things at extraordinary times. And that happens. But the Mahabhagavata devotees, the Raga Bhaktas, even an ordinary, seemingly ordinary, trivial event can become laden with spiritual conception. So for them, there's almost an inverse. Very simple things. That's a very simple thing. You can say a very human response to a situation. But where does his mind go? His heart, his mind, where does it go? To someplace very, very high. So ordinary events are reminding him of very high things. So there's an element of humor and irony, but spiritual substance, profundity at the basis of it all.